Hey, everybody, Gil Diesel here. Welcome back to the Half Hour Power.
And this is Jesse.
Hey, Jesse, you have a good week?
Oh, man, I went to a cabin in the woods and did a bunch of peyote and came up with the screenplay.
Really? What was it about?
It's about a bunch of guys in the woods doing peyote, coming up with a screenplay.
What happened then?
That do you need more? That's perfect the way it is, sir.
All right. Yeah, I guess so. So, yeah, this week we're going to be talking about Cabin in the Woods. And before we get into that, we are going to see what happened at the box office last weekend. So, Jesse, what do you think was number one?
Number one was Maleficent.
All right, yeah, right on. Number two?
A Million Ways to Die in the West.
No.
What was number two?
Oh, you don't want another guess?
No, if I want another guess, I say X-Men.
Okay, X-Men. It was X-Men. So number three was A Million Ways to Die in the West. And what do you think is number four?
Well, it better be Godzilla, because it's the best movie still out, so.
Godzilla, and that leaves us with number five.
Blended.
Yes, Blended rounds out the top five there, so there we go. We see the box office battle still going. The winners are still too early to see who's going to be the winner of the summer, maybe, but kind of taking some shape. So, yes, we are going to be talking about Cabin in the Woods. Everybody I've talked to who has seen this movie has said I need to see it. And it just took me a long time to see it. I don't know why. It's not that I didn't trust the people that are telling me. It's just one of those movies. It's like, yeah, I want to see that. And, you know, I never did. I mean, you got movies like that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, there's a ton of them that people come. My Netflix is full of those. My list on Netflix is full of those kind of movies.
Yeah. Well, this movie came out 2012. And
yeah.
I've been meaning to see it ever since then.
Yeah.
And I actually recently saw it. And there was a hole in our schedule, so we thought this would fit perfectly right here.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be talking about Cabin in the Woods. So when did you see this? Did you see this when it came out in theaters, or did you see it later?
I saw it on opening day when it came out in theaters. Got to see it on the big screen. I know, you're jealous.
Oh.
Cool.
Yeah, poor salt. Poor salt in the wound.
It's not my fault you're a loser who doesn't go see movies anymore.
What?
That's not my fault you're a loser.
Yeah, I lost on this one. It's true. So what were your impressions of it after you saw it? Did you like it immediately? Was it one of those ones you had to roll around in your head for a while, or what?
No, I loved it immediately. It's a film that doesn't play around. It's pretty blunt. It's, you know, it is what it is, you know. It has some really great twists in it. It's not your average slasher flick. It's a lot more thoughtful, and, you know, it's kind of meta. It's a, you know, it's almost like they know they're in a movie, but they don't know they're in a movie, but they play on the conventions of past slasher movies.
Yeah. Nice rundown there. Do you want to run down the basic plot real quick?
Well, a bunch of kids go to a cabin in the woods, and murderous people come to find them.
Yeah, it's really simple. It's a very simple plot. I mean, obviously, there's a little bit more into it, and you can see that right at the beginning of the movie that it's not really just, as you just described it, it's not really just a slasher,
yeah,
horror movie, monster movie. I mean, IMDb listed as a thriller, horror, mystery movie.
Yeah,
I liked it also when I saw it, and not because everybody who I talked to had seen it told me they'd like it, but because I really think it's a really good movie. And, yeah, I am a little jealous I missed it on the big screen.
Yeah, it's a nice movie to see on the big screen, especially that final moment. It's nice to see on a big screen. Again, as everybody knows, we won't give away spoilers, so if you haven't seen it, well, I guess that's just too bad for you. But or you can just wait until after you watch the movie and then come back and listen to us on the archives.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So this got a – I didn't mind the cast. I knew you were – as we were talking earlier, you were not happy with one of the cast members, at least one of them.
Well, I mean, I don't think he does a bad job in the movie. I think he's good in the movie. He's fine in the movie. It's just that guy weirds me out, so.
Well, what, the way he did the character or what?
Just the way he talks, his voice, and everything just weirds me out. Everything about him weirds me out.
He's
good in the movie. Stoner is good in the movie.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, he is good in the movie.
He is. He's good in this. Obviously, it's got Chris Hemsworth in it, who is obviously Thor. Now, something about this movie, this was actually shot from March to May of 2009. So this was, you know, actually being shot before, obviously, Chris Hemsworth was in Star Trek. He played Kirk's father. This was being shot before that came out. This was shot even before Thor came out, but it was released after both of those. So, and that was due to MGM's financial trouble at the time. So that's why it was shelved. It wasn't shelved because they thought they had a bad product on their hand. It was just the financial trouble. Well, it finally did get released, and I guess that was kind of good for it because I could see people wanting to go see it because Chris Hemsworth in it, and him making that impression as Thor and to a lesser extent as Kirk's father in Star Trek, I could see that attraction with that. But for me, that's not what attracted it. Did that attract you to it, Chris Hemsworth? Was he dreamy for you?
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm not a fan. I'm just going to say this. I'm not a fan of Thor. I don't think the Thor movies are any good. I think they're really boring. They really bore me. The only time I liked Thor was when he's with the Avengers. But his standalone movies are pretty boring, and I don't really enjoy them. What drew me to the picture was, I hope I pronounced his name right, Joss Whedon, being a writer on it and producer, because I've always enjoyed his television work, like Firefly, Buffy, and Angel. So him doing this movie, I definitely had to see it. He also directed Serenity, and I think everybody knows he directed The Avengers. He didn't direct this flick. Drew Goddard directed this flick, but he does a fine job directing the movie. The movie's quite well directed, quite well written. Like I said, there's a lot of surprising twists, but even though Chris Hemsworth is in the movie, the star, to me, in the movie is Bradley Whitford and, oh, my God, I can't remember the other guy's name, the two controllers of the project of the experiment.
Richard Jenkins
and Bradley Whitford, thank you. They're the stars of the film. The movie is hers, you know.
Absolutely, I agree. I mean, they play the two, what do you call them, like controllers?
Yeah. I'm sure
they
have another name.
Yeah, there probably is, but just for us right now, without digging through a bunch of stuff to see what they were called, we'll just call them the two controllers. It starts with them. The movie starts out with them. It doesn't start out. I mean, to me, the movie makes no mystery that it's a little bit different.
All right, because the beginning guy.
There's
the
a little
beginning
bit something
scene is
more there.
Because the beginning scene, those two talk about Bradley Whitford and his wife having fertility problems.
Yeah.
And the fact that she baby-proofed the house, even though they don't have a baby, and it's annoying.
Yeah, and the setting, I mean, it's, what is that, some kind of office control room area where they're talking about, and you're looking at it going, whoa, yeah, is this the cabin in the woods? What's going on?
Yeah, they're
in a
break room.
The trailer, what's that?
They're in a break room. They're getting coffee.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So now a little bit of trivia about that scene was Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon deliberately had the opening scene that way to confuse the audience and to make them think they're walking into the wrong movie. that's kind of funny. I think it works perfectly that way. I like that. I don't think it really...
Yeah.
But, I mean, it takes you aback a little bit, because if you watch the trailer, at least the one couple trailers I saw, I didn't see any really... Those guys weren't showcased that much in the trailer, so...
Mm-hmm.
I could see that throwing some people off, but after you see that, you know there's something a little bit different about what's happening.
Yeah. Like in the first 10 minutes of the movie, you see them talk about, you know, the beginning. Then it goes to the teenagers talking about going on their trip. Then it cuts back to those two guys, the trollers, going into their control room, and then it cuts to the scene of the kids at the gas station. Where the crazy old fart is telling them not to go up to the woods. Don't go up to the woods.
Yeah.
Which they did. And then you see that bird flying to the force field. that's the opening.
Yeah.
That's the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the movies that are in the Cat in the Woods genre that it's sort of sending up.
Mm.
Satirizing, they have that old guy or that tells the kids don't do this.
Yeah,
I think this guy's great in the movie. I love that scene.
It's the Chainsaw Massacre scene, because it's like the scene in Chainsaw Massacre where the kids go up to the drive to the gas station. One of them buys barbecue or something like that. And,
yep. Yep.
That's where they pick up the crazy guy, Leatherface's brother, the one who likes to take pictures.
Yeah, they pick up the hitchhiker there, but yeah, so
right,
absolutely, that guy's in that, and you're like, oh, okay, so yeah, that guy's there. So you might think, well, that's just cliche. What's that in there for? Well, that is a payoff for just about every little cliche they put in it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, every single little... There's a reason why they do it. It's in there for a reason. It's supposed to be in there. When they arrive at the cabin immediately reminded me of Evil Dead Cabin.
Right.
And that was supposed to be that way, too, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, everything in the movie is a reference to a horror movie or... Because they kind of almost imply that those horror movies were made for the benefits of a audience so that the audience wouldn't murder them. Is there a way of appeasing the audience? Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, once they get to the cabin, it's, you know, typical teeny bopper stuff. They drink and go skinny dip. Well, they don't go skinny dipping, did they?
No.
They go swimming in the lake.
Two of the kids do wander off to enact in some Friday the 13th hijinks.
Yes. Oh, I see we're up against a break here. So we'll be right back to talk about Cabin in the Woods. Are you looking for that perfect vacation getaway? Are you sick and tired of the same old boring getaways? Are you looking for that special place where everything is just a hop, skip, and a jump away? Are you looking for someplace exciting, exotic, and erotic? Then you need Cabins in the City. That's right, Cabins in the City. Our cabins are built smack dab in the middle of everything, so you will never want for anything. Away from woods full of insects and werewolves. Away from isolation in the middle of nowhere, where you could be dead for months and no one will ever know. All cabins in the city today for that perfect getaway. Cabins in the city. Warning. You can just as easily be mutilated and killed in a cabin in the city as you can in a cabin in the woods. All right, we're back here talking about Cabin in the Woods. So they're at the cabin in the woods. Now, throughout the movie, it's kind of interspersed with the controllers and what they're doing, isn't it?
Yeah, because everything that these kids are doing in the woods was set up by the controllers. Basically, these kids have so many different options when they find the basement, and they get in the basement, they... Each one picks up a certain object, and this object awakens these, would you say, evil spirits or evil monsters?
Monsters, yeah.
So whichever one does it first, those monsters get to come and kill the kids to, again, appease the audience. So it could always be different. Like there's, just to name some of the references, like there's the crazy family, there's the mer people, there's the... giant monsters. There's actually some like Hellraiser-like characters, things like that, you know. So these kids have all these options, and the one that they accidentally pick. They don't know they're picking it. They don't know anything will happen, but they pick one, and it basically sets off the movie into motion.
Yeah, there's a great scene that goes with what you're talking about with all the choices. They cut back to the controllers, and they're taking bets.
Oh,
yeah. To which one they're going to pick, and they have a lot of the choices written on this whiteboard. And some of the things on the whiteboard, you've named some of them, but a couple of them also are Deadites was listed on there, and also the Angry Molesting Tree was listed on the whiteboard, and some other ones, you know, Giant Snake, Mommy, Zombie, Redneck Torture Family. Which is actually what they ended up waking up.
Right.
So there's a whole bunch more on that whiteboard. I was talking to Tim, and he was telling me about the whiteboard and asked me if I'd seen everything on it. I'm like, no, I haven't. I mean, there's a lot to see there. And it's a movie you can go back and watch and see it, different things in it. But yeah, he pointed that out to me, and I was looking it up here now. I was like, wow, there's a lot there that's references to other horror movies and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things to be discovered in the cabin in the woods.
Yeah. One of the things I loved is the scene where the gas station attendant calls the control room. Do you remember what the gas station attendant is called?
I don't remember the gas station's name, the gas station attendant's name. What's his name?
His title in the movie is The Harbinger. So he's the Harbinger.
The Harbinger,
yeah.
That is a great scene, too. And I love he's trying to do his Harbinger thing. They ventured here. They're going to die. And maybe blah, blah. And then they have him on speakerphone.
Yeah.
And he stops. Am I on speakerphone? And he sounds different. You know, he changes his voice. They go, oh, am I on speakerphone? Well, this is just unprofessional. He doesn't say unprofessional, but... That's really funny. So there's a lot of great stuff in there just like that. And would you say there's any scares? Is there any scares in this movie at all? Is the horror element represented in it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a true horror comedy. There's not too many true horror comedies. Like, you know, Ghostbusters and, like, Adam Costello beat Frankenstein have horror elements, but they're not in any way a horror movie. They're just there for a comedy effects, like Shaun of the Dead, Cabin in the Woods. Those are true horror comedies because they actually have all the horror and the dark. Because a lot of the comedy is dark comedy. The movie's played real light. It's a real light movie. There is a lot of great gore where they're killing people and chopping heads off, and the scene at the end when all the monsters are released. There's a lot of great stuff in it.
Yeah, so, They get killed by the zombie redneck torture family, and I thought this was interesting. The guy that figured it out is the stoner guy Your favorite guy. And I love the comment one of the ladies make up in the controller room. She's like, yeah, but they missed one of his stashes, and it's doing away with everything we've done to him. So you know that there's some kind of a team that went out there, chose all these kids, got them all together,
right,
manipulated them in subtle ways that sent them out there. But I love how one of the controllers actually says ultimately the choice is theirs.
Right. I mean,
they just guide them a little bit.
Along.
Yeah,
like
so
the,
they push them in those directions. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, like the one of the female characters had just dyed her hair blonde, so they would have a dumb blonde, because the dye actually goes into her head and makes her dumber.
Yeah. They wanted to push these characters into and make them into these stereotypes, the jock, the nymphomaniac bimbo, the Weasley guy, the nerd, the virgin. So they're all fit in that way. And once he figures this out, they get into this elevator thing, don't they? And what happens from there? What do they see?
Actually, when they go down the elevator, they see all the possible outcomes they could have had if they had pushed something else. Like, they see all the different kinds of monsters that could have came up and killed them all. Like, the one that I like best, my favorite one is the ones with the creepy porcelain doll mask.
Oh, yeah.
That was nice. Those are, like, the best.
Yeah, those were cool. And there's they see a Cenobite-looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he was named. But it was kind of funny, too, right before that scene. They thought they'd won. They thought they'd finished everything. And they keep hinting towards they're doing this for a reason. They're doing it for something bigger. There's something bigger at work here. But we just don't know what it is yet. They haven't told the audience yet, which is fine.
Right.
We get it revealed. When it's finally revealed, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But, so they're doing something for the greater good. And they think they won, and they celebrated. And it's just funny watching them all celebrate, and the zombie guys are trying to finish killing everybody. But then those two escape, the virgin and the, what is he called,
Stoner.
The weekly guy? Stoner.
He's called the Stoner. He's called the Stoner.
Okay, the Stoner, or the Fool, was the type he's supposed to be. So they escape, they see all that. And what happens when she realizes, I think both of them realize that those guards are going to come down and kill them because they're heavily armed.
Yeah.
And so what does she do? What do they do from there?
Well, basically what happens is that they release all these creatures out into the, I'm going to call it the factory that they work in, the control room. And so then they find the, what's basically the sacrifice room. Because what's happened is that all these kids are being sacrificed, basically like in the Aztec times and stuff like that, for these gods, so that these gods won't rise up and destroy humanity. So they're trying to save humanity by sacrificing these kids in a cabin in the woods.
Yeah, and if for some reason they don't complete it, then the gods rise up and destroy the world.
Right.
Now, that's kind of interesting. It looked like there were a lot of different sacrifices going on around the world in a lot of different countries. Did you get from the movie that meant that only one of them had to succeed and they all didn't have to succeed? Just one of them had to succeed. That's why they were doing multiple ones. I mean, that's kind of what I got. What did you get?
Basically a fail-safe. Each country gives up a certain amount of, give up a sacrifice just in case the kids make it through, just in case they're survivors and the sacrifice doesn't work for that country. There's always a backup country. One of the things of this movie is that when it starts, everyone else has failed except for the United States and Japan. So they're the only two who can actually give a proper sacrifice to these gods. Now, if they all succeed, they just all succeed. They all have to do it. They all have to happen. But as long as one of them makes it, everything will excuse me, I'm sorry, everything will be okay.
Yeah. And that Japan ended up not succeeding, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. At the end, none of them make it because they all, these bastard kids, all defeat their monsters.
Yeah, I think the one thing that caught me off guard, I didn't expect it, was Sigourney Weaver was in it.
Yeah, she's the, I guess, superintendent. I think that's what they call her, the superintendent.
Yeah, and Jack, when she came, I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
she explains to them what's going on, and she kind of gives them a choice that, you know, you guys should actually finish this because the world's going to end.
Well, one of the things that's funny about it is that the girl who they deem the virgin tells him outright that she's not a virgin. And he said, well, you're close enough.
Yeah.
Of course, in the Japanese version, they were all like 12-year-old girls, so. Because they were fighting a ghost or something like that. Something like from Ring or something like that.
Yeah. So they end up making a choice, and what happens then? What's their choice? This is the ultimate
their choice
story, right?
Is to let the world end. They're well, I must say they're jerks. They're jerks, and they decide that they'd rather have the world end than die.
So the very last shot. I think it was the very last shot. Was you see this giant hand rise up out of the ground and smack the earth?
Yeah.
So you can only guess from there that, yeah, the old gods came up and destroyed everything.
Yeah. Basically, they would destroy the Earth, yes.
Yeah, so there won't be a sequel.
I hope not. It's pretty sort of the way it is.
I was reading somewhere that at a screening, Drew Goddard was asked if there was going to be a sequel, and he just asked questioner if he had seen the end of the movie.
Pretty
funny.
I think a sequel, it would be a truly forced sequel. There's no way they could actually organically, as they say, make that into a sequel. Yeah, have a sequel off of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing you can really do with it is show the old gods kill all the humans and
yeah, there's nothing else that could happen.
You know, what is that going to be, about 5 minutes? You know, I can't see any of the humans actually surviving for a long amount of time. Can you?
Right. No, there's no way that could happen. I mean, there are supposed to be more than just one god. There are supposed to be like millions of them. So, and they were
a lot. Yeah.
Basically, they were being entertained, rolled back into sleep every year.
Here we come. Unfortunately, we come down to the end again, and time goes by really quickly. We talk about something you really like. So if you want to give your final thoughts on Cabin in the Woods?
I suggest it to anybody who enjoys Joss Whedon's work or just enjoy comedy and good horror, because it has some great funny bits in it and it has some great horror moments in it. It's a pretty damn good film.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're like me and everybody you talk to says you should see it because they think you'd like it, just see it. Just stop putting it off like I was and just watch it. So there we go, Cabin in the Woods. So next week is actually a fun day, Friday the 13th. So what we're actually going to do for next week, we're just going to do a two-parter that day, and we're going to talk about slasher movies and the Friday the 13th series, because it's Friday the 13th. So we'll have a show at 11:30 and then a show at 12:30. The second part will be at 12:30. So we'll have a two-parter. We'll have some fun with that. And today happened to be Robert Englund's birthday, so happy birthday to Robert Englund. I don't think we need to tell anybody who that is. If you're listening and you don't know who that is, I don't know what to tell you. Do you?
I know. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and I just want to say this is the anniversary of D-Day, and I just want to remember all those men and women and everybody that served for D-Day. I just want to remember that. So anyway, we had a great time, and we will see you guys next week.